web at newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duver and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution. Good afternoon, Diane.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great because we have on today my favorite guests.
I know. We are your favorite guests,
yes,
aren't we?
Yes, it's me and you.
Me and you.
Yeah, by popular demand.
Actually, we did get great reviews. Some people emailing saying that, you know, they enjoy our two-man show.
Yes. One was from your husband and one was from my wife.
Details.
So we thought we'd talk about some of the really interesting news articles that have appeared in the last week or so. And I found this particularly interesting. It's entitled, How Quants Are Calming the Stock Market. Now, for those who aren't familiar with quants, quants are is a nickname for investors who, instead of using fundamental research and, quite frankly, people, use computers and algorithms to have the computer make the investment decisions.
And so when you think about what quants are, a lot of that is that robo-advising that you hear, a robo-advisor, where it's just a computer that does asset allocation and kind of does the research on it.
Exactly. But this is a robo-investing on steroids.
Right. Well, robo-investing is for individuals, whereas quant investing is more for a hedge fund or a money manager.
Right. And so what has happened in the last few years is some quantitative funds have outperformed individual fundamental investors.
And I think it's important to pause, though, and describe what a fundamental investor is. So when you look at fundamentals, is you're really looking at the underlying business metrics of a company. So you're looking at their sales, their cash flows, their book value, or what the company could be sold at. You know, those are the types of metrics that you're looking at if you're looking at fundamentals.
Exactly. And Graham and Dodd, who wrote a textbook in the same year that Arnaldi's Cafe opened in 1937, wrote a textbook that Graham and Dodd, that Warren Buffett used, and in fact had one of the two as his professor at Columbia in 1951. What the Graham and Dodd theory holds is that a stock is worth a discounted value of the present value of all of its dividends, which could be used, you could use earnings as a proxy for that. So the idea is to do your research and basically be able to estimate sales, profit margins, and earnings over a long period of time and compare the present value of that flow to current price. Well, over the last few years, index funds have outperformed those traditional fundamental investors. So there's been a search for a solution that is, rather than simply be totally passive and buy an index fund, some people believed, and in fact have performed fairly well, by creating algorithms and using 19-year-olds with slide rules in their pockets who are graduated from MIT at 16, who are quantitative geniuses, to create these very complicated programs. In fact, two of the largest hedge funds in the country about 3 months ago announced they were firing all their fundamental analysts because they're just going to use these quantitative theories to manage money. Now, there's a index called the VIX, which is a volatility index that people use to see how much volatility there is in the system at any given time. And right now, the volatility index is very, very low. And this article, coming back to the article, essentially tries to relate the low volatility in the marketplace to the rise in quantitative investing. And quantitative investing has increased significantly. It has doubled in the last 4 years. And one of the effects of the significant increase in quantitative analysis is that one of the ways that they manage their portfolios is to pay for metadata, M-E-T-A metadata, which is a whole host of information that they buy, including iPhone pictures of parking lots at a Costco, somebody clicking in how many people went to a Sears Roebuck on a Saturday afternoon, and they take literally thousands of bits of information, put them into a computer, and they believe they're able to anticipate problems or overly good earnings and therefore beat the market.
And I think that that's why they named or entitled this article what they did, how the quants are calming the market, because the thought behind the market is if you have the bad news priced in, then it doesn't affect the stock price. So if the market already knows that XYZ bad thing is going to happen, it's priced into the market, and you're not going to see a big drop when that actually happens.
Exactly right. And what the article says is that if there are fewer things that lead to surprises because information is going from completely unknown to completely known, then you have less volatility. Investors sell when they hear bad news about a company. But if they're getting their news from multiple sources over time and they're beginning to they're being fed information slowly that's correct, then you should have less volatility. Now, the irony of all this is that if we ended up in a situation in which everyone was using some form of quantitative analysis, and if the metrics that they're using and the metadata that they're using is telling people that every piece of information is known, it ironically means that fundamental analysis may be useful again, because one of the things about fundamental analysis is it permits you to look at aberrations in the market. So to the extent that there are no aberrations in the market because everyone knows everything, then fundamental analysis may be a waste of time.
And that's really what the efficient market theory is based on, that everybody knows all the information in the market. And so you have a very efficient market. You have a market that's doing what it's supposed to. But you're absolutely right, Neil, in that if everybody knows everything, it lends itself to having disruptions in the market by people thinking about what isn't known.
And this is why probably hedge fund performance has been really disappointing over the last 5 years, because in the last 20, 25 years, in the beginning of that period, hedge funds did very well because they were able to find opportunities to invest that people weren't seeing. But that space became so crowded with people doing exactly the same thing, the arbitrages available were reduced to pennies. And as a result, everyone doing the same thing, chasing the same investment, hedge fund results became less than spectacular.
I think you can actually use that same rule of thumb throughout that whole alternative space, just not hedge funds, but private equity. You know, it's interesting when you look at private equity, everyone wants to get in on that next Facebook or that next Apple or Google or whatever the major hits are. They're very few and far between. You know, it goes back to that old saying, you have to kiss a lot of frogs before you find a prince. And it's the same in that private equity space, those companies that aren't yet public, and you're hoping to really make that, you know, quadruple, tenfold home run.
Is that true for males, too? If I want to find a princess, do I have to kiss a lot of frogs? Or
I don't know, Neil. Maybe you could take on some personal research on that topic.
Right,
I'm sure your wife will be totally fine with it.
Right. I'm sitting home kissing a bunch of frogs that I buy at Petco. Anyway, the interesting thing about this is that when you're a ordinary investor, sometimes by the time you hear that something is really good, it's too late.
It's true.
Yeah, which is another reason why you need professional investment advice. Don't you agree, Diane?
I do agree. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's not even that the person that you're working with knows more than you. It's the person that you're working with is thinking about this day in and day out and looking out for what's in your best interest. And I oftentimes tell people, it's not about hitting that home run. It's about not making mistakes along the way. It's a lot harder to make it, especially as you age. You can't recreate this wealth. This is what you have. So a lot of it's about preserving what you have as opposed to making, you know, 100% in return.
So if you think about something a lot, like an investment advisor does, is that like me being a hypochondriac and thinking about my health, meaning I can be my own doctor? Is that, does that analogy hold true?
No, that's a whole different show.
Okay, different show. Okay. Well, we better regroup. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
Hello, I'm Kelly Marsh, the branch manager of Broadview Mortgage in Santa Barbara, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara area native who has spent the past 19 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit BroadviewSB.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Broadview Mortgage can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act, license number 813G136, NMLS number 170528, an equal housing lender.
Hey, at our startup, my team and I move at the speed of tech 24/7, and every single day, it's information overload. It's coming at me from all directions, and you know what? Bottom line, I just need the news that matters. So where do I turn? Local radio and TV. I want to hear from people who live and work in my town. They give me the real story, with information I know I can rely on. So where else can I find out what's happening in my community? Weather and traffic, things that affect my family and my business. I want to stay informed by sources I trust. My local radio and TV stations. For the best entertainment, sports, news, traffic, and weather, with no agenda and more reliable than other platforms. So if you ask me for the information I want anytime, anywhere, I stay local. Support your local station. Text RADIO to 52886 today. Furnished by the NAB and this station. Message and data rates may apply. Reply STOP to opt out.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 564-1290.
Or you could also email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. And if you'd like to follow or listen to this podcast on your, at your own, on your own time, if 2 o'clock on Mondays doesn't work for you, we can also be found on iTunes at moneytalk1290.
So today's New York Times had an article called U.S. Inflation Remains Low, and That's a Problem, which is interesting because for the last 40 years, there was a general view that inflation was bad, no inflation was good. Of course, what we saw in the late 80s, early 90s is when Japan had deflation, which is really bad. And by the way, deflation is really bad because if prices are going down, people tend to put off purchases because they believe that prices will go further down. So businesses don't buy capital equipment. Consumers wait until the price of the TV goes down, and so business comes to a halt. So there is this thin line between too much inflation, no inflation, and deflation.
Well, and really what you saw coming out of the 2008 crisis is this fear of deflation. And so if you look at that's the reason why you had the stimulus packages that were put out through our economy. Conversely, in Europe, you had austerity put into place, which means they weren't pumping, the government was not pumping capital into their economies. And it's kind of interesting to look since 2008, the differences between the U.S. economy and our rebound, which, you know, rebound might not be the correct terminology because it's been so slow, but the fact that we've remained in a constant, albeit slow, growth rate compared to Europe, where there was really no growth rate. And now they've started to employ those some more monetary programs like we had, stimulus, and they're now, they're about 4 years behind the U.S. in terms of their you know, their recovery.
Well, what's interesting is that the Federal Reserve believes that there is a benefit for modest inflation. And the belief is that if you have a little inflation, it brightens the economic mood, causing wages and corporate profits to rise. Now, there is an illusion effect to this, because if wages and corporate profits rise equal to inflation, it just gets wiped out on a present value basis. But the Fed believes...
But lots of people, you don't see that.
Yes.
Because what you see is the fact that you are making more money. So your direct deposit into your checking account is more. What you don't necessarily see on a day-to-day basis is the fact that everything you buy has also gone up by that same percentage. That's and that illusion that you're talking about.
Exactly. And so the Fed believes that a little inflation does help the economy rebound from recession. And it gives the Fed some room to reduce borrowing costs in case the economy needs it. So inflation can, if it's under control, can, in their view, brighten the economic mood.
Well, yeah. And, you know, from the Fed standpoint, is they're looking at what tools they have available to them in the event our economy needs something else, another injection of something. And if there's no inflation and the rates don't start to increase, their tools that they can pull from really contract. And so when you only have one or two instead of four or five, six different options to employ, it definitely makes a difference.
And job growth remains strong, but consumer spending and business investment has been sluggish. The Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, which had predicted the economy would grow at an annualized rate of 4% in the second quarter, now estimates the second quarter will only grow at 2.5%. So now here's the rub. The Fed has begun to raise interest rates, anticipating that inflation will be higher than 2%. And so they began to reverse the easy money policies of the last 8 years. And so the question is, what should they be doing now if inflation isn't rising, and if the economy is still a little bit sluggish? Are they raising rates too quickly? And I find this paragraph really interesting, particularly given the politics today. Let me just read the paragraph. One theory popular among conservative economists is that the Fed causes inflation by increasing the supply of money faster than the pace of economic growth, says Ken Hassett, President Trump's nominee to lead the Council of Economic Advisers, who, this is the article, was among the signatories of a 2010 open letter warning the Fed's plans to pump money into the banking system, quote, would risk currency debasement and inflation. 7 years later, there is no evidence that they were correct, although they continue to issue similar warnings, which I think, you know, gets to this thing about alternate facts.
I have to say, there's nothing you love more than when they continue to do, when people continue to do something that has been proven
and get rewarded for it. I mean, I don't know why they don't make me head of the Council of Economic Advisers.
Well, because you were busy running for president.
And I would not live in Washington, so it's too hot there. So the interesting thing is, you know, people have anticipated that the Trump bump and that the economic environment is going to get hotter. But what we've had is a sort of a sense that the world's going to get better economically under Trump. Taxes will be cut, regulation will be eliminated, and therefore businesses will invest heavily, and therefore inflation will pick up. But it hasn't happened yet. You've had the exuberance, but you've had a stalling of the economic policy in Washington. And now some investors are beginning to be wary of the expectation that the economy will heat up. As a result, inflation is not anywhere near what it should be. And so there's a question about what the Fed should do now.
That said, though, you know, not that I'm defending anybody, but the Trump presidency has only been, I know it feels like forever, but it's only been 6 months. And so
that's not true. It's been 2 years, hasn't it?
It feels like that upon the amount of news coming out of it.
Sorry.
But it's only been 6 months. And really, from a market perspective, it's best if interest rates are below 5% and moving upward gradually. It's usually the sweet spot of when the stock market expands the most. Mm. And so if your dollars are invested in the stock market, this isn't a bad thing for you, this slow growth. It's actually going to prolong the bull market run, if you will. Now, that said, there's always cycles. So when that next cycle happens and we hit the next recession, it's part of the normal market cycle. I think in today's day and age, we've become so used to one way, and if it's always black or white, there's no gray. But in the markets, there is that gray area where you have to run the course of the cycle has to run its course, mm-hmm. where you have an expansion phase and then a contraction phase, and we're still in the expansion phase. And with interest rates continuing to stay low, it could be a couple more years before we see our next stock market pullback.
And what's so interesting about the stock market today is that's information that you would ordinarily think would be a cause for the market to decline. You see the opposite. So, for example, when you find that growth isn't as robust as you thought, and as a result, the Fed rethinks whether they should raise interest rates, the stock market goes up. Stock market goes up because as interest rates go down, the stock market becomes more attractive because the cost of money goes down. And so the idea of owning a dividend stock or any kind of stock becomes more favorable.
Well, I know what's interesting right now? We have these charts that show the difference between the dividend yield in the S&P 500 versus usually it's some bond rating. Right now it's like an A-BB bond rating. What's more attractive? And usually when you get below a AAA, it's the bonds really can be very attractive in their interest rate that they're providing. Right now, still the S&P 500 dividend is higher than an A-BBB rated bond portfolio.
And what's interesting is on Friday, TIPS, Treasury inflation-protected
securities
took a hit, again, because inflation expectations are down. So TIPS, which are a way of hedging against increased inflation, have become less attractive versus T-bills, which is more of a sign that people are expecting that inflation is not going to be as high as people expect, which means the Fed may have to pull back.
Well, that or, it's as with investing, it's usually better to take the road less traveled, or maybe those people are going to be wrong. You just don't know.
And that's why we all should be talking to Diane Duver at Arlington Financial Advisors. Is that correct?
Neil, you're a crack up. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's not just me, but I think the reason why you should get a second look at your portfolio, especially if you're self-managing or if you don't feel comfortable with your current advisor, for whatever the reasons may be.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Diane Duva with an invitation for you to enjoy a great dining experience at my favorite restaurant, the world-famous Arnaldi's Cafe. One of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940. It's located on the corner of Olive and Coda Streets in downtown Santa Barbara. Arnaldi's specializes in traditional home-style Italian food prepared with the freshest produce, finest quality meats and fish, and the very best imported Italian meats, cheeses, and olive oil, along with local fish and specials from our Santa Barbara Farmers Market, and an extensive wine list served in the unique atmosphere of a candlelit dining room. Arnaldi's also caters to weddings and rehearsal dinners, receptions, graduations, birthdays, holiday parties, or any special event with two large dining rooms, a huge heated patio, fire pit, two bocce ball courts, and a stone barbecue with red oak wood. And Arnaldi's is happy to work with you to create a custom menu and handle any special requests. Visit arnaldis.com or call 805-962-5394. It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. And we could be reached at 564-1290. So This article that is our next article up is sort of a bounce from the last article. And one of the indicators, leading indicators, you know, there are different kinds of indicators that have been in the textbooks for 50 years. And one of the used and believed to be accurate in long-term, short-term indicators is consumer confidence. And there are several sources of consumer confidence. The most reliable has always been the University of Michigan Consumer Confidence Index. And after Trump won, this is what the article says, American optimism about the economic future soared. By midway through the year, the optimism has not translated into economic gains. This seemingly contradiction exposes a reality about the psychology and economics, and more specifically, how psychology is connected only loosely to actual growth. It turns out that confidence is not the magic elixir for the economy. Businesses will hire and invest only when they see concrete evidence of demand for their products, and consumers intensify their spending only when their incomes justify it. So the stock market moves when consumer index rises because they anticipate that will be followed by economic gains. But if the business community is not convinced and they don't hire and consumers don't go out and spend because their income hasn't increased, then this is a false indicator. And so the article is pointing out that we have this confusion now both about inflation and about consumer confidence that has risen because of the expectation called the Trump bump, that Trump would do something. But in fact, economic growth has basically been the same as it's been for the last 18 months during the first 6 months.
I think the Trump bump, if you dissect it down dissect it down a little bit further, is you had a lot of companies in certain indexes. So, for instance, the building really do well after Trump got elected because he was so adamant about building the wall. And so if you had to build a wall stretching the whole, 1,200 miles of border between the U.S. and Mexico.
You sound like a New Yorker. Everything west of the Hudson River you don't care about.
No, but if you had to build that wall, it would require a lot of building materials. Now, the fact that the wall hasn't, Trump has gone back on that, where I guess there's about 600 miles of wall that exists today, and now he's basically said he's going to build, make sure the wall's 900 miles. That gives you 300 miles of wall left to build. Whether or not it happens, who knows? But if there really was going to be a wall constructed, you would see cement companies and construction companies really doing well. And they did go up, and they were part of that Trump bump.
In addition to the wall was the expectation that we'd have infrastructure capital spending that was long overdue. And instead of having this bipartisan, a huge spending bill to fix our infrastructure, we've gotten some tepid comments from the administration about a joint venture that would possibly cause private investors and cities and states to use money they don't have to do their own infrastructure
spending.
You
want to know what's interesting? So the former CEO of Microsoft, which I'm forgetting his name.
Ballmer,
yes, thank you. He has started a foundation about numbers because he said, the government's numbers, there's no place to easily obtain these. And he's publishing them in Time magazine. And so he's saying, okay, what are the things that I keep hearing are an issue, infrastructure being one of them? Well, infrastructure, if you do it based upon how many drivers there are and how many fatalities they are, the roads are actually better than what he originally assumed they were or were told they were. And so he and his wife have created this foundation to do where the numbers are. And next week I'll bring in kind of his article about where the numbers are. And I think it's interesting because it's something that's been needed for a long time to have a place where you can easily digest these numbers and how they're calculated. Because otherwise you just have politicians and people telling you what they are, and who knows if it's true or not.
Yeah, well, tell that to someone riding on the New York City subway system that was renovated in 1890. I'm not sure.
It's one of those things, though, where, yes, I'm sure there are pockets of things that everything needs improvement and updating, but it might not be quite to the the bridges aren't not structurally sound.
The next article is is sort of it's surprising to me, which surprised me, which was that
when you're surprised, you get surprised more than once.
When you talk about a mutual fund performance or actually a hedge fund's performance, you tend to look at the published data that the fund puts out, which typically is on either a calendar or a fiscal year. But this article in the Wall Street Journal says that peak to peak and trough to trough comparisons, which are not typically publicly available, are the real way to decide whether or not a fund has performed well. That is, you should be looking at the performance over a full cycle, not simply by looking at what's published, which is just simply calendar year. And they are citing a study done by a consulting group and found that when you did that, and I'm not going to go through which funds the performance was reversed, that they found that many funds had totally different performance, relative performance, when looked at, when they look at through a complete cycle. So it's...
And that's really what you want in a manager. You want someone who can manage not only in the good times, but also how are they hedging your downside risk?
And, you know, as one of Arlington Financial's great salespersons, I'd like to point out that doing this is not that easy if you're a civilian. That is, if you're just simply looking at the newspaper, it is helpful to have someone who knows how to do this, to look at the peak-to-peak, trough-to-trough numbers. This is not something that you can pick up just by looking at your Yahoo Finance page. Now, this is an interesting article. This is China will become part of a popular stock index, opening the door to foreign money. Now, the reason this is important is that in almost every sector, investors tend to compare their performance to other funds doing the same thing. And the easiest way to do that is to compare your performance to a benchmark that's an index. So, for example, when they change the composition of stocks in the Dow or the S&P, every fund, not only index funds, but any fund that measures itself against the S&P really needs to consider buying those stocks that are in the S&P to protect themselves from not being put into not losing out to a performance that they're not going to be able to participate in. So China is a country that, you know, some people can just ignore, but not anymore, because they're going into the index for emerging markets, the MSCI Emerging Markets Index, which means that fund managers now are going to either have to add Chinese stocks or risk underperforming because particular Chinese stocks do well.
Right. And, you know, and that's a big deal because China is a difficult place to get information from. It's not as transparent as our markets. You know, it's interesting, Neil, let me ask you this. How much do you think that China exports to the U.S. based upon their Chinese GDP? Or
do I have to answer what I thought it was
hours
ago?
Yes, you have to answer what you thought it was
40%.
And the answer is no. Actually, it's 4%. So the U.S.
I was close. I just had an extra zero.
Exactly. You were close. You had the right front number. But it's interesting in that most Americans look around and we think everything was made in China by the looks. But in fact, it's only 4% of their overall GDP that they export to the U.S. So, right. You know, if you think about it, that means the United States consumption of Chinese products is minuscule in the greater picture of their GDP.
Yeah, I don't believe that statistic, and I have no basis for saying that. Beliefs, you know, faith is it just doesn't make sense.
I'll send you the paper.
Then it must be right if it's in a paper.
Well, it's not a newspaper. It's a paper put out by Matthews, who does all of their investing in the Chinese market.
Okay, so you know other thing that's interesting about foreign investing is that when you look at a pure American play, you find out that 40% of the earnings of the S&P 500 companies are not American. So even companies, if you invest in quote-unquote only American companies, you still have a very significant exposure to foreign earnings. So when you take a look at the, you know, some of the rhetoric coming out of Washington about tariffs and about changing the landscape for international trade, you have to consider that the company that you own that you think is American is significantly impacted by what goes on overseas.
Absolutely. Coca-Cola being one of the biggest, right. You know, in having it be impacted. You know, at our firm, we're overweighted in Asia relative to European international investing because we just see that Southeast Asia has a huge emerging middle class. When you look at who's, you know, emerging middle class, the numbers are equivalent to every person living in the United States. There's about 350 million emerging middle class. And what does that mean? That means those are people that are going to have disposable income, able to purchase goods and services.
What's so amazing, when I went to elementary school and we looked at history, we basically looked at history as America being the center of the universe. And today, if you have a broad international view, you realize that China and India dwarf American markets by a significant amount. You know, each country is five times bigger than America. And so if you're going to be a player in the world over the next 100 years, you really need to be involved in those markets. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
People are always talking about the stock market, always looking to invest in a good opportunity, something with the potential to grow. So what if you could invest in the future of kids, like a stock? Not the kind of stock where you invest to make money, but a stock for a social change. A whole new kind of investment called Better Futures. When you invest, it helps students like me go to college, which ends up making the future better for everybody. I could be the first college graduate in my family, the first district attorney for my neighborhood. And if I'm the first, then maybe there will be a second and a third. This can really be the start of something. My name is Charles, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. A public service announcement brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
People's Self-Help Housing is a national award-winning nonprofit organization celebrating 35 years of experience in creating affordable housing and self-sufficiency programs for lower-income families, seniors, and those with special needs. People's Self-Help Housing has helped to create over 1,000 self-help ownership homes and over 1,200 affordable rentals. 400 children annually are served through their K-12 education enhancement programs. People's Self-Help Housing is committed to expanding its core vision of providing housing for low-income families, seniors, and the physically challenged. The organization also provides complimentary social services designed to assist each resident. People's Self-Help Housing believes that affordable, safe, and quality housing leads to healthy communities, which benefit us all. You can help in these efforts to create more housing and related social services by calling 962-5152. That's 962-5152.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive Street in downtown Santa Barbara.
And do you know that last week when I went to play my bocce ball, the other team was so scared of Arlington's bocce ball, they forfeited. You know, it was a riveting game.
Something happened to me on my other show about education. The guests must have been frightened. He didn't show up.
It's the same. You are intimidating, Neil.
I am intimidating. It's the same thing. So this is an interesting article. There's been an increase. There's been, over the last 2 years, an increase in subprime auto lending, which is would be a bigger threat to the economy if it wasn't for the fact that this is not like housing where it's so important to the economy, but it's still a big number. And what's happening is the people are beginning to have to pay the piper where so many loans have been made egregiously. And what I mean by that is there are dealers in this country that take cars and offer them to people who have no credit but need a car to go to work. And they overprice the car, and they sell it to the people with no money down, with no credit check. And then when the person can't pay, they take the car away. But the problem is, unlike a house, the repossessed car is only the beginning, because these are personally guaranteed notes, so that the debt then becomes something that can be collected. And so people are finding they no longer have a car to get to work, and now they're being chased to pay for the remaining part of the loan.
It's just disgusting. That's such predatory lending, in terms of they're lending it to you knowing that you're high risk. They're repossessing it knowing that you don't have any means to either refinance the debt that you owe or have the means to hire an attorney to defend you. And then they're collecting on the debt as well and reselling that car to another unsuspecting person.
What's amazing is, you know, people never learn. I mean, not the people borrowing, because again, you know, maybe this is skewed a little bit to the left, this article saying that people buy cars simply because they need to go to work. I'm sure there are other people that buy cars that shouldn't be buying cars. But the reality is that you've got a system in place that's almost designed to have people fail. And this is exactly what happened in the housing market in 2008. And this is a reason that I think you need regulation, not deregulation, because people are really being hurt by the predatory nature of this type of lending. So the next article is entitled Calm, Cool, and Waiting to Collect on This Bet. And the question that the article begins with is, can a rational investor enter a wild market without losing his mind? And about 70 years ago, Graham and Dodd, we talked about this book, said that the biggest dangers in buying a quote-unquote hot asset is speculate when you think you're investing, and speculating seriously instead of as a pastime. And so...
Say that again?
Let me explain it by giving the next line, because what basically Graham is saying is that if you invest in these speculative investments and believe you're investing and taking it seriously, you really run the risk of losing all your money. So what he suggests, what he suggested in 1937, Nicholas Taleb, who wrote Black Swan, suggested 5 years ago, is that if you want to speculate, the way to speculate is what Taleb called a barbell strategy, which is to put 90% or more of your money in very conservative investments, whether it's bonds, whether it's blue chip stocks, high dividend paying stocks. And if you want to speculate, take a small amount of money, money that you can afford to lose, and hope that you get a breakout. But to the extent that you believe you can predict breakouts, and put all of or substantial amount of your money into a particular investment is a very dangerous game.
It definitely is. And, you know, we have lots of clients who do, you know, there are lots of people out there who like as a hobby to follow certain stocks. And they're usually penny stocks. You know, a lot of what's going on right now is a lot of people speculating in the cannabis market with investment dollars. And when you look at somebody's overall financial plan or picture, it's okay to do it with a sliver. It's okay to do it with a portion of your overall wealth. But what it's not okay is to do it to put your entire financial well-being at risk. And that's really, you know, whether you're talking about speculative investments or a singular investment. I know there are people out there who think Apple is the only way because everyone's carrying an iPhone around and an iPad and a Mac, a computer. Now, that's not prudent either. Even though Apple is known to be a very safe investment by today's standards, it's never smart to put all of your dollars in one particular company. Just like last week when we were speaking about those employees that worked for their company and also put most of their 401k money or savings into their company. It's just not a good idea. That's why diversification is really a key to investing successfully.
And also to say that Apple's a safe company, it's a safe company fundamentally, but it may not be a safe company based on price. So when you buy stocks, you're not just looking at the fundamentals, you're looking at whether or not the price is discounting the future earnings effectively, if it's not overpriced. By the way, the story that you talked about people investing in cannabis companies reminds me of one of the first investments I made when I was on Wall Street.
In a cannabis company?
No, it was in a condominium complex called Century City in Florida. It was one of the first complexes for retirees.
So it was like a 55 and older facility?
And it was huge. And I remember not knowing anything about it, but saying this demographically, this makes sense. So I put $30,000 into the stock, and within a month, it was worth a dollar because it went under. And I find it to be so humorous because the apartments went from 27,000 to 100,000. So instead of buying the stock, I could have bought an apartment. So I would suggest people investing in cannabis companies think about smoking a joint rather than buying a cannabis business.
Well, you know, it's going to be something that Santa Barbara County especially is going to have to grapple with, given that the state of California has legalized marijuana and we're very fertile grounds for growing at Carpinteria with all of the plants and flowers that we have right now. A lot of them are being approached to use that land for cannabis.
Yeah, the yield, I understand it's 60-1 tulips versus marijuana. So if you are converting, you can really increase your price, your profit significantly.
But there are unintended consequences, as with anything.
Yeah, true. This article I found really interesting, which was leverage loans going wild. Loans sales are running ahead of the pace of last 3 years into this sector. Now, what's leverage loans? Leverage loans are loans that are collateralized, guaranteed, by the assets of the company. So they're not investment grade. They're not guaranteed like you would buy IBM, and they're guaranteed by the earning power. They're guaranteed. They're subprime type loans that are guaranteed by the assets. And
so in other words, if it's a manufacturing company, it's guaranteed by their
inventory and the machinery.
Inventory and the machinery.
Which, in my view, humbly, is insane. Because if the company gets into trouble because it can't sell the dresses they're making, what is the inventory worth? So the question is, is this another example? And leverage loans have a higher yield than bonds of people chasing interest.
And people are chasing yield right now. As you have interest rates still in your money markets, you know, at 0.01%, it's enticing to investors who are more comfortable with bond investing than they are with stocks. They think stocks are risky. But when you look at that dividend chart, dividends versus yield, dividends of the S&P 500 still out. Perform.
And here's another example of people chasing yield and not really understanding what they're buying. And in fact, the fact that they advertise that this is a good loan because it's guaranteed by the assets of the company is really sort of naive.
You know, and it's also misleading, you know, because they're not selling into a sophisticated market. They're selling into yield chasers, and yield chasers tend to be people who are very conservative and are looking to live off their interest. A lot of elderly people are investing they're used to investing in CDs, and CDs now are paying, you know, 0.25%. It's not enough to live on.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZ and KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Diane Duva with an invitation for you to enjoy a great dining experience at my favorite restaurant, the world-famous Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940. It's located on the corner of Olive and Coda Streets in downtown Santa Barbara. Arnaldi's specializes in traditional home-style Italian food, prepared with the freshest produce, finest quality meats and fish, and the very best imported Italian meats, cheeses, and olive oil, along with local fish and specials from our Santa Barbara Farmers Market, and an extensive wine list served in the unique atmosphere of a candlelit dining room. Arnaldi's also caters to weddings and rehearsal dinners, receptions, graduations, birthdays, holiday parties, or any special event, with two large dining rooms, a huge heated patio, fire pit, two bocce ball courts, and a stone barbecue with red oak wood. And Arnaldi's is happy to work with you to create a custom menu and handle any special requests. Visit Arnaldi's.com or call 805-962-5394.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
Hello, I'm Kelly Marsh, the branch manager of Broadview Mortgage in Santa Barbara, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara area native who has spent the past 19 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit BroadviewSB.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Broadview Mortgage can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act, license number 813G136, NMLS number 170528, an equal housing lender.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. And this article that I have in front of me is talking about how borrowing has made a comeback. After the collapse of 2008, debt was reduced, sometimes not intentionally, sometimes intentionally. and so some observers think that this growing debt among particularly the millennials, I can't pronounce that word.
Millennials.
Is a good thing. But here's the interesting thing that this article points out, that a good deal of the debt is being used to pay things other than capital spending. It's being used, A, to pay back student debt, and it's being used to pay back things like medical bills, credit card loans, to reduce auto loans. So there is this sort of—
So that their car doesn't get repossessed.
Exactly. So, you know, again, this is where metrics that sometimes were helpful as a predictive tool in the past, you have to be careful that the fundamentals haven't changed. So when you look at consumer optimism and you see that consumer debt is increasing, in this case, you look at consumer debt increasing and say, wait a minute, it's not because people are buying more refrigerators, it's because they're borrowing so they can pay off things that are necessary but are not adding to GDP, like student debt.
That said, though, I think if you look at any studies, Americans are higher, as a percentage, have saved more than they used to, or they have more in their savings accounts than they used to. So that's positive on the personal financial planning front. Mm. Not so positive on the economic, macroeconomic front, where you're measuring things based upon how much consumers are buying as a indicator of, you know, growth in companies. So, you know, when you look at the millennial group, I think that it's interesting in that they are the most conservative and also the most self-prescribed uneducated about investing in money. There was a study recently done that said millennials are by far saying that they don't understand personal finance. They don't understand investing in the markets. And that's where the gap between when you have a 90-year-old client and a 25-year-old client, and the 90-year-old client is much more aggressive than the 25-year-old client, just because of knowledge and comfort and understanding how the world works. And I think it's going to take a while of in terms of education to get the millennial group to be saving and investing, because to save early only works for you if you're getting that compounding interest. But if you're keeping it in a money market that's paying you 0.01%, you're not reaping the benefits of compound interest.
Of your client base, how many, what percent are millennials?
Not very many. Most millennials aren't comfortable with investing at this point. And I do have some financial planning clients where they're not invested with me, but they come in and pay for advice as millennials, but very few as millennials, full-fledged clients.
So that's really interesting that you've got a whole generation coming up that sort of ignoring the wisdom that's so obvious that if you invest now, you can actually have a retirement that's going to provide you with a...
Well, I often say to people, I say, okay, well, if you put your money in today, I don't know if in 5 years it's going to be worth more, but what I do know is in 20 and 30 years it will be worth more. It just will.
So thank you so much for this intelligent conversation. And next week we're going to test you on this. We're going to have an exam so that everyone is held accountable.
And if you missed any piece that you want to go back and re-listen to, don't forget to go to iTunes at Money Talk 1290.
Thanks for listening. We'll be next week with another edition of Money Talk.